This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're at in the U.S., anywhere in the world. Not sure where you're at, but we want to welcome you all to Baseball Outside the Box. This is a show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. Thanks for joining us. Also, ESPN Honolulu, thanks for joining the show. We are so thrilled that all of you are listening there. And remember, we are in over 100 countries. We have players, parents, and coaches listening in over 100 countries. And we want to thank all our listeners. God bless you all, man, for helping us share the show and getting it out. But we just continue to bring you some top people. Today, we're going to bring you a fantastic college coach, a legendary coach, incredible, an ABCA member. He just retired 2 days ago from the University of New Mexico. I mean, think about this, 1,224 wins, 169 guys in pro ball. I'm just mentioning a few things about him. 5 NCAA tournament appearances, 7 Mountain West championships, 43 years coaching baseball. That's now, think about college baseball. He's also coached high school and American Legion, 4 decades in coaching, 3 Hall of Fames. I mean, I can keep going on, folks. But I met this gentleman at Mickey Owen Baseball School. I can't remember. I might have been like 17 or 18 or 20, somewhere in that age. And we're going to talk about the baseball school. And he's also, think about this, the nephew of my mentor, Dick Birmingham, one of the greatest people, human beings, one of the greatest coaches that cared about people. I would not be doing anything I'm doing worldwide, whether it was Team USA, whether it's coaching around the world, if it wasn't for Dick Birmingham. So let's not even waste any time. Let me welcome to the show Ray Birmingham. What's up, buddy? How you doing, man?
Hi, Pete. Good to see you, buddy.
Hey, you're looking sharp.
You are, too.
Yeah,
you are, too.
And we're both still hanging in there after all these years. I can't even remember the age. I don't know how old I was when I met you in Mickey Owen Baseball School.
1980.
Wow, you got better memory than I do. 1980. Hey, before we get into Dick, I think it'd be appropriate. I mentioned the school, so I just want to mention, the first time you attended, talk about just briefly what you thought about Mickey Owen Baseball School, why it was so successful.
Well, at that time in the 70s, 60s, 50s, whenever Mickey started, I can't remember. I think it was 60s. But there wasn't anywhere to go get fundamental instruction. And across the country, you're in small town USA. And back then, small town USA was big in this country. And there was no instruction at all. It was a little bit, but the lucky guys got a real serious baseball coach. And the rest of us got a coach who was competitive, but he was also the linebacker, the O-line, the quarterback coach on the football team, which was more important than being the baseball coach. So we had to find a place, and the only two places you could find that I knew of in the country to go find instruction was Mickey Owen Baseball School, a little bit of the old Show Me Baseball Camp,
yep,
which was struggling, and Chandler Baseball Camp in Oklahoma. And that was it. And kids from all over the country. When Dick got in charge of instruction at Mickey Owen, I couldn't wait to get there. I'd only been coaching a couple of years, and I'm like, I need to learn. And Dick was a consummate teacher of the game. Fundamentally as sound and as, if you went just by the book, how he taught you, you'd win. And those guys don't exist anymore. And yeah, I'm lucky. I was born into his family, actually. So yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is, and I definitely, we're going to spend some good time on Dick, but I also want to mention the school a little bit, because the school no longer is actually a baseball school. It's run by a lot of tournaments, when we were there, like you said, kids came from all over the U.S. They also came from all over the world. But these were kids, I know because I was one of them as a student, these were kids, just average players, or maybe a little bit below, because they wanted to get better. And how they got better was cool, because, man, it was baseball 24 hours a day. There was no swimming pool. There was no air conditioning. It was hard knocks baseball, and that's all you did all day under some great coaches, headed up by Coach Birmingham, obviously.
Yeah, it was. You know, I had a kid named Patterson. I had the 13 and 14-year-olds, and he was a little bitty kid from Phoenix, said he was going to play in the big leagues. And he was a good ball player. And sure enough, he played in the big leagues. Michael Jordan went to school there. Charlie Sheen went to school there. I mean, all walks of life. It was in Sporting News. The advertisement for the school was in Sporting News. And everybody came there. Rich, poor, saved their money. Whatever it was, they had to get to Mickey Owens Baseball School. It was a deal. It was a big time deal.
Yeah, I remember my parents, you know, just from a humble, you know, beginning. I mean, they didn't have a lot of money, and they knew I loved baseball. So they, you know, raised the money and got me there. And I remember my first day there, I got there, folks. And this is the middle of nowhere. You know, I'm a Chicago kid. I get there. I'm wondering, you know, it's raining. It was a day off. I'm looking at the place going, you know, I want to go home. You know, my mom and dad, especially my dad, said, you ain't going nowhere, because, you know, you said you want to do this and you're going to do it to the end. Right. I spent 10 years after that there, 10 years of my life at Mickey Owens Baseball School. Greatest thing for me, obviously being under Dick, who taught me a lot. You know, Jerry Nyman, you know, the thing also, Ray, and that I thought was important, was there was a lot of instruction going on, but also we played games at night, the combination of both.
We did. I mean, it was 24/7 baseball. And I remember the cabins. You could buy a $5 box fan and parlay that into a $25 swing by selling it. Because that box fan was important in those cabins. And I remember the first day I got there, they told me, Coach, we're gonna feed you breakfast. And breakfast was big time. Those ladies could cook.
Yes.
And I got in the kitchen at breakfast before everybody else got up. And my job, they fed me. They told me I had an early morning job. I said, cool, that's great. They fed me like a king. I went, I've never been treated like this with this kind of breakfast in my life. And then they said, well, you ready to go to work? And I said, I did. So they walked me outside and out the back door and handed me a hoe and walked me to the bathroom. And my job was to get the snakes out of the shower areas before the kids came. I said, what kind of snakes? They said, water moccasins. I said, oh, my dear Lord.
You were used to that one, right? I mean, that was an easy, no?
No, because rattlesnakes in where I'm from aren't aggressive as water moccasins. They're aggressive.
Wow. Hey, folks, just to give you an idea, and I wish some of these baseball schools were still around, Ray, because I remember, you know, we'd get up in the morning, eat breakfast, then we'd go work out and do some drills. You know, then we, as counselors, we'd fix the field. So I'd learn how to fix fields. I was a below average player, but it made me much better because every day I was doing something. Then in the afternoon, after lunch, we'd practice again. Then at night, we played two games. And if we didn't play two games as counselors, we umpired one game and played a game. So not only did I learn how to umpire, then I learned from the best coaches. I learned about fields. You know, we just don't nowadays, you know, there's so much travel ball going on. And I know travel ball can be good depending on how it's run. But talk about, you know, your experience for players when we're getting away from fundamentals a little bit, how that can hurt them long run.
No, it's bad. I mean, I watched it across the country as a college coach, and it's just playing now. No feel for the game. Very few guys have a feel for the game. Base running has just gone. But good base running is hard to find. I've watched it, and it's disheartening. And they had a series of things, and Dick did, on everything that you were supposed to do, from putting on your uniform to how to dress yourself, how to wear your cap, how to wear your socks, how to, you know, lead off first base, you know, how to stand of attention at the national anthem. I mean, it was detailed, and it was 24/7, and it was hot. It was really hot.
Yeah.
And, but you just, you just kept doing it. And you were tired by the end of 2 weeks, you were tired and you're ready to go home and another swing, because you couldn't stay the whole time. You did, yeah. But I stayed 2 weeks at a time for about 4 or 5 years. And I was ready to go home after 2 weeks because they wore you out.
Absolutely. You know, and speaking about Dick, you know, what's interesting is Dick was, to me, was one of the best speakers in the world. I mean, he could speak with the best of them. He was so organized, so detailed. Talk about Dick's influence in your coaching career and the things that you learned from him that made you the coach that, you know, you are today.
You know, Dick was old school and he was demanding, but he had a way of delivery that didn't turn you off when he demanded from you.
Yeah.
You know, it was something that I learned. I went, wow, there you go. And as I went on and started going off and coaching in college, you know, I went to Show Me and started working after a while when Dick went over to Show Me later on. And I roomed with Bill Verdon. And I bothered Bill, you know, when we go to the room at night, we're ready to go to bed. It was a long day. I would start asking him questions. And eventually he told me something that Dick did, Bill Verdon told me, and Tommy Lasorda told me the same thing later on. Had told me earlier in my career, was you'll figure out, you'll never learn everything, just continue to learn. But the foundation of baseball is be a good people person. Dick was the best.
I agree, you know, and what was interesting about him, you know, people talk about, you know, you got to play 100%. Some people say, oh, he can play 120%. Dick could get anybody, and this is a special talent, and I still don't understand how you can do this. He can get any player to play 100% the whole game, no matter what the score was. I mean, when I saw his teams, they're hustling on and off the field all the time. You don't have to tell him to hustle. What was it that Dick had? How did Dick get that? I could never understand that.
Because he did it every day. And he would explain to him, like, if a guy didn't hustle, he didn't call you out in front of everybody.
Right.
He would catch you after practice. And he would have a sit down with you. And I learned that. And you call a player out in front of everybody, you've turned him off and you've lost his attention. He's not listening to you. Dick didn't do that. And so he's what we used to be, was proper repetition day in and day out. The greatest athletes don't make it to the big leagues. The guys who can get it done day in and day out from April to September playing the big leagues.
Yeah, I agree, man. I'll tell you what, you know, the other thing about Dick is he always seemed to be 3-4 steps ahead of you. You know, they say coaches, you know, and I'm sure you do the same thing. You think 3-4 steps, 5 steps. I mean, he was almost a year ahead in a lot of ways in some of the things he was doing. Did that influence how you did your coaching or how you were thinking ahead in games?
Yes. Yeah, I was, you know, I would make lineups before a game, not only for the first inning, but for the ninth inning. And any switches I needed to make, I made sure I didn't make the lineup where it would affect and keep me from making that switch. So, and the other thing he did was he prepared you mentally for the ninth. He prepared you mentally for anything that you ran into, because he was a great conversationalist. And when it got too serious, he had a feel for when it got too serious, he'd throw in one of his legendary jokes.
Yes.
And kept you comfortable and kept your attention. So, I mean, he was a consummate teacher, one of the greatest teachers of all time, and the best fundamentalist in the game.
You know, he reminded me, I've always said, he reminded me of Greg Landry of baseball. I don't know why. Maybe because he had that accent, you know, and he had that persona and he walked into a room. I mean, he was with Whitey Herzog. I can't remember the other guys, but famous guys. And guess who was doing the talking? It was Dick Birmingham. And guess who was doing the listening? It was these guys who've been unbelievable managers at the big league level. And I think something you brought up And I want to ask you about that, because sometimes we're so serious. I know you coach national teams, you know, USA Baseball. Sometimes, you know, we're so serious before a game. And I always wonder, can't we just relax and have some fun before a game? I know you got to concentrate and get ready, but Dick knew how to use that humor to get you relaxed also.
No, he's really good at it. He was really good at keeping people organized. I think before he went to bed, he reviewed the next day in his head. He was always writing things down. You always see him writing things down on a notepad before he went to bed. I mean, there was a point in his life when he got offered a job at Arizona State, I believe, and his pay as assistant coach at Arizona State was less than he was making as a high school coach in Springfield, Missouri. So obviously, Rosemary said, nope, not happening. And so what I do know is that the best coaches are in high school. The best coaches are at the ground floor. They can't go out and just get a bunch of great players and let's set them free. They got to really, really, really coach. And he would take an average Joe and turn him into a good ball player and win. But when he had a whole bunch of good ball players, then he really won. And he was in the national championship back in the day in the 50s and the 60s when American Legion was off the charts. Yeah. American Legion baseball was as competitive as any level, anywhere in the country. And he got into that national championship a whole bunch of times from Springfield, Missouri. And he's playing, you know, he's playing L.A., he's playing Chicago. He's playing big cities where they've got a little bit better pick of kids from around the, because in the American Legion, you had to have your kids from a certain area.
Folks, just to give you an idea, I mean, a high school coach at Hillcrest High School, I remember his American Legion records, like 120 and like 10 losses. I mean, it was just ridiculous numbers. And we're talking about Springfield, Missouri, a hotbed of baseball. We're not talking about an area where there wasn't a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent in that whole area, a lot of competition, you know. And, you know, it's interesting to here's a guy that was in the Iowa. I think this will kind of solidify it. In the Iowa High School Coaches Hall of Fame, he spoke there 14 times at their convention. Folks, he never coached in Iowa.
Ever.
In the Hall of Fame. I don't know of any coach in the country, and there may be, and I don't want to, you know, insult anybody, but there may be. I don't know of any coach that's in another Hall of Fame that's never coached in that state. Incredible.
Incredible. And everybody, I mean, once everybody would say you've got to have Dick Birmingham speak at your convention. And he was on the speaker's tour for 20 years because one, he knew what he was doing. Two, his lecture was really good. And it was mixed with some of the greatest jokes in the history of jokes.
Yeah. And again, that's how he got his players also to play better, because he had those attributes that you just mentioned, because, you know, he could get people to listen. And once you can get them to listen, I mean, at least, you know, now, you know, they've got it inside of them and they got an understanding where a lot of guys are speaking and you're kind of listening and then you're not. Let me ask you, Ray, you mentioned someone, but if you were to ask, what are Dick's biggest strengths that would help other coaches if they can get, you know, make those strengths better, what would those be, his biggest?
Organized, really organized every day. He never varied from, he knew the proper repetition. He knew that being very well organized, that this is the Hillcrest way was the Hillcrest way forever. You knew what to expect every day. His demeanor never changed. The kids knew that's going to make Dick mad. Here we go. And we earned it. His discipline was always fair and consistent. His knowledge of the game was never ending. He never complicated. He kept the game simple. He made a really hard game simple. And I mean, he would take a kid that threw 83 to 85 and beat a kid throwing 91 to 93 because he knew fundamentals would beat that kid. That kid's going to walk some people. we've got to bunt him over, and we've got a chance. And he would take that kid with an 83 to 85 and teach him the best curveball in the country for strikes. And they couldn't hit him.
They didn't walk anybody. And bingo, I think you hit it right in a bun. Talk about a coach who knew how to teach the overhand curveball. And in high school, and I think at most levels, if you got a pretty good overhand curveball, that's right, that's not easy to hit because it's going downward, so you only have one plane to hit it on. It's not like a slider that kind of stays flat a little bit, right?
No, they threw it in a fastball plane. They threw it with great spin. As I grew older, people say, well, the kid doesn't have a feel for a curveball. And, you know, we've got a bunch of kids throwing 96 to 97. And I go, that's not going to work unless you have a secondary pitch you can throw for strikes. It's a good one. They'll time you up eventually and wear you out. And they have. And Dick knew that in 1960. In 1960, he knew changing speeds, throwing strikes, playing catch was the key to the game. And everybody on the field was good at it. They didn't make any defensive mistakes. And offense was fundamental. Fundamental.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right on the button again, man, the fundamental aspect of it. Let's talk about Ray Birmingham now because, man, 43 years in the game. You know, obviously learned a lot from Dick, and I'm assuming, you know, being ABCA member, you know, that you also, you know, have learned a lot from other coaches. What's the difference between when you started coaching college baseball and when you finished at the end? Was there a difference in college baseball? Was it recruiting or anything else that was different?
Big difference.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up and Dick introduced me to Gary Ward, Gene Stevenson. I mean, people don't even know who they are now.
Right.
Yeah. Ron Frazier.
Yeah.
Bob Bennett. Frank White, George Brett, Stan Musial. I can just go down the list. And they're all fundamentalists. Ron Polk. Ron Polk kept the game. He wrote a big book that's still today the best coaching book you can get. If you're a young coach, get Ron Polk's book and memorize it. And Dick made his baseball. You know, I'm at the University of New Mexico. It's a mid-major. It's not Arkansas. It's not LSU. I clean bathrooms. I sell tickets. I raise money. I've driven the bus. I've fixed the bus, not necessarily here, but at junior college or so wherever I've been. I've put the sprinkler system in myself. I fixed the sprinklers myself. I mowed myself. I fixed the mower myself. I've learned to weld and cut pipe so I can build a fence and use a screw gun. Fixed PA systems. I'm an electrician. I'm a plumber. That's what baseball coaches used to be.
Yeah.
And you built your own ballpark. I've built three ballparks and two of them I built myself. Bulldozer, blade and grass, you know, building the field with, I learned to run a bulldozer, a blade, front end loader, dump truck, all those things. And now today I hear those kids who all they do is go out and recruit and they call themselves grinders. Come on, man. You have no clue. You have no clue.
If you had these kids in a room and they're all young and they want to get into coaching, what would you be your advice to them if they're going to get into that profession?
Well, if you want to be a really good coach, which if you want to talk, there's a difference today between college Division I guys. They're a little bit of coaching and a whole lot of general manager in them. Mm. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So the real coaching goes on in high school. It, you know, the guy didn't get to go out and pick his kids. He just gets who's ever rolled in the area. And if he's short, he's got to coach some kids up. Dick Birmingham. You got to build your own field. There's no money for your baseball program. You got to do your own fundraiser. I've sold trash cans, t-shirts, hats, soap, candy, you name it. I've sold it. And you got to think of yourself as a class A low level guy who bought a minor league team like the old Bull Durham. And you're doing it all. And the coaches, if you really want to learn how to coach, not manage, not recruit, but you want to really learn how to coach, you got to work your way through the levels, because guys are jumping now. They're used car salesmen. They get on the phone. They go to a ballpark. They say, please come to the University of such and such. We've got everything you need. We'll turn you into, you know, Sandy Koufax and blah, blah, blah. Look at our facilities. And all those things are important now, because that's what they're doing. They're selling. They're not coaching. And coaching, Gary Ward coached. Gene Stevenson coached and did all that. He was a grinder. Gary Ward was a grinder. Coach Frazier was a grinder. Skip Berkman was a grinder. Those guys, Skip Berkman came from junior college. Horton at Oregon for a long time, he came from junior college. And we did have to drive the bus, and we did have to fix the bus, and we did have to make sandwiches to put in there so the kids could eat between games. I mean, we did it all. And that doesn't happen anymore. You know, you didn't used to be able to buy an L screen or an infield screen or a pitching platform. Where were you going to buy them? There was no magazine to buy. There was no website to buy them from.
Right.
You didn't need to raise any money, because if you've had the money, where were you going to buy it from? You had to learn to make it. Ron Polk's book, in the back of the book, gives you instructions on how to build an L screen, an infield drag. I mean, those are the things. Coach Frazier used to take his baseballs and put them in a dryer. He poured milk on them so they looked new every day, because he didn't have the money for new baseballs.
Mm.
And people used to that. And we were the trainers too. We went with the trainers. We learned to tape ankles. We learned CPR. We learned medicine. We learned it all, because we had to be, because we were the coach, the bus driver, and the trainer.
So for a lot of young people, I mean, a great place to start to be able to do all that would be high school, could be junior college. I mean, I know when you get to a Division I top level, whether it's a Miami or an Arizona State, a lot of times the head coach, it seems like, or the assistants run the practices more than the head guy does. Am I off on that?
No, that's true. That's what's happening now, too. And it's just get the best, just to get, now they just get the best talent, run through practice every day. Pitching coach is huge, because you got to get a guy who's really good at coaching pitching, and you let him play, you know, and it's different. A lot of guys don't want to go to junior college and coach, which I think the purest baseball today is junior college baseball. Junior college baseball is still what baseball always was. And I may go back and coach junior college. I make my money now, and I'm ready to go back to junior college and coach, because there was enough games that there weren't any hourly rules. You still could make boys into men, and there was no entitlement. You didn't have to give them pretty things to turn them into baseball players. They were hungry to learn. So guys are skipping that now, and you can see it clear as day. And they pretend to know the game, but they don't know the game.
You know, the other aspect of college baseball, and I know coaches might call me and say, I'm looking for a player, for my school. If I don't know your university and I don't know the level of it, it's hard for me to recommend a player. You know, everybody's a little different, obviously, talent-wise, because we all can't go after the top players. The question is, at the University of New Mexico, talent is one thing. But what other things did you look at when you were recruiting players that were important to you to bring to that university?
I needed my kind of player, and it's getting harder to find my kind of player. Way back, the old scouts, you know, now scouts look like they're 12 years old, and they all dress the same. They have a golf hat and, you know, a cool shirt and, you know, bling. And
Ray, that could be because we're getting older, right? They look younger.
Oh, you're correct. They look at me, but you old codger. But you're right. And the old scouts, you didn't know they were there.
Right.
They didn't sit in the front row with a radar gun. They were invisible because they didn't want to change the way you played because they were there.
Good point. And,
but the part being with that is that the game has changed, and Major League Baseball influences everything. Mm-hmm. So the game has changed. And now, you know, if you did a bat flip with Bob Gibson, just count on being in the hospital.
Right.
You know? And if you did a little sign at second base after you hit a double or some kind of cool motion, count on being in the hospital. And those things were true then. And now I'm looking for a guy with enough intelligence to understand the game. And they're hard to find. And enough true passion, real passion, like I love this game and I want to be really good. Alex Bregman. So Alex Bregman has been a friend of mine since he was in eighth grade. And he would come to me and just buy in. I mean, he would buy in. And you'll see coaches say, buy in. So I needed brains, needed the passion to buy in. And then I need the guts and determination to fight like crazy because this is a hard game and you're going to fail and be able to get through that. And that's hard to find nowadays because nowadays it's pay to play. And pay to play has really affected the game at the young kids because they write their check and they're going to play. Your American Legion team wasn't that way. Right. You know, your American Legion team wasn't that way. And there was a time when people got a little jealous and said, well, Dick Birmingham is so good because he coaches his kids in the summer. Well, he's taking the time to do it. He could go fishing like you did, but he didn't. He coached his kids in the summer. And so they got year-round instruction and play and games to get better. And then so the coaches association voted out that the high school coach couldn't coach in the summer anymore.
Wow.
And that's kind of a pull you down mentality, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of everybody raised to that level, nowadays we lower the bar. We keep lowering the bar. And I might sound like an old codger, which I am, but I see the bar being lowered.
But those are great points. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, I've got a lot of friends in high school, and God bless them, man, what they do as teachers and what they do in coaching these young people. And like you said, they're great teachers, run great practices. They don't get to pick their players. But I know that, you know, at a certain point in certain parts of the state, travel ball started and they were complaining because, you know, travel ball was kind of taken over in the summer. And I always said to them, and again, I'm just trying to help. I said, well, why don't you just do what they do then with your kids? Take your kids to a tournament. But the key is to continue to practice, because you said it earlier, we're not practicing enough. I get the point, Ray, that we got to play games. Kids got to play games. I get it. But the problem is now we're playing so many games that some of these kids aren't even practicing. Well, how are we going to be fundamentally strong if we're not practicing?
And it's true because, I became good friends with Steve Alford. And Steve and I were tight. And Steve said, guys were going in college, Division I college basketball. A lot of guys now are going to AAU. They don't go to a high school coach. Nobody calls a high school coach anymore. They call the select teams coaches. And AAU was getting to where they were playing more than they were practicing. So Division I guys were going. And if you look, they were going to outside the United States, Canada, Europe, wherever they could go. Because those guys were fundamentally sound because they practiced more than they played. And yes, you have to have a mix of both, but we've wiped out one of the mixes. We've wiped out the practice, and you can see it today.
Absolutely. You know, and folks, I'm sure, you know, our show's in over 100 countries. There's over 140 countries playing baseball. There's some unbelievable talent out there, not just in Latin America. Now it's Europe, Japan, there is, you know, Africa. There's more places you're starting to see players come. So the competition for the American kid is getting stronger. Ray, how about advice for the American kid? And it could be for all kids, but especially American kids, because of what we're talking about. And I don't want to hit the panic button, but advice. We talk about you need to practice. So if your team's not practicing, then find time to practice on your own. And you also talked about instincts. A lot of these kids don't have the instincts anymore for playing the game. So your advice for young players, what can they do to get better if they're only with their team?
Well, here's what happens. So, you know, we got George Brett at Mickey Owen. During that strike year, he came and did a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And he played at El Segundo High School, California. And him and his brother were the best players on their team, no doubt. And they both pitched, played shortstop, and hit, right? So But back in the day, though, not every team was loaded with all the good players and go play all the teams with all the average to below players and just walk away and beat them by talent. They had to raise those guys were on teams and they had to look around and go, I want to win a state championship. So I've got to help Billy play right field better. I've got to help. And that happened for me too. When I won state championships was, and then those kids would buy into, hey, we've got to get so-and-so to frame the ball better. So we'd help the catcher. So those guys had to be high tides, raise all boats. Kids don't have to go through that anymore. And they don't have to go through the adversity of they just go somewhere and out talent people. That's what they do. It's just a talent. It's a beauty pageant. And they don't have to have the determination to be that leader to raise a team. And there was a guy that coached at Mickey Owens with us. And I'll remember his name in a minute, but Bill was from San Francisco. He was one of Dick's good friends, and he started Diamond Baseball and was selling, you know, bring him. And Bill played for the Mets. And he said the Mets were terrible in the 60s. And he said 1968, they got a rookie on the Mets, and they had the team meeting. Gil Hodges had just taken over. And Gil gave him the rules, you know, you got to be a man, don't stay out late drinking, do all those things. And are there any questions? And a rookie in the back of the room said, I didn't come here to lose. I came here to win, and I expect every one of you to have the same mentality. And those are the guys that change it. That was Tom Seaver. Wow. And those are the guys that have to be put in a situation where it's not all talent, because it makes you better. It makes you better as a ball player that I've got to help everybody. I got to understand the game. I got to help coach, raise all the boats on this team, and we can pull this off. That makes you better.
You know, earlier you mentioned MLB, you know, they're at the top and they kind of influence things, you know, and I've talked about it on the show. My concern here, we are talking about practicing, right? And getting better at skills and mm-hmm. then getting better at the game. Mm-hmm. And this is baseball outside the box. So I kind of think I'm an outside the box thinker, you know, like in the Olympics when I was with the World Baseball Coaches program. We instituted the man on second rule in the Olympics. That reason that was instituted was because the games were too long and they were going to eliminate baseball from the Olympics for that reason. Also for drug reasons, you know, drug testing. So we instituted that. Okay. So I was in favor, and that, you know, a lot of people were not, because, you know, traditionalists aren't going to believe in that. But here's my concern now. All of a sudden now we want to implement rules where pitchers have to step off before they pick off. Catchers, we may have an electronic strike zone, and I'm thinking, where's the teaching then? If I got an electronic strike zone, there's no more umpire relationship. There's no more framing. I don't have to teach base stealing anymore if the pitcher's got to step off before he throws. So that's my concern of where we're heading with the game. What's your advice for MLB to be very careful in what they're implementing? Just because it works in the minors, you know, I'm not sure, because that could translate down to the young kids also.
I think MLB is going to price. I think Division I baseball is going to price themselves out of the market too. I think Academy ball is going to price themselves out of the market too, because it's all a money grab. Money starts the root of all of that, and steroids is a root of money, because there's so much money being paid that you're going to compromise your values to do it. There's too much money to be made. So I'm a purist, and I think people are getting extremely tired of watching Major League Baseball because of the strikeouts and just home run derby. Mm. I mean, you don't see the Brett Butlers anymore who could flip a ball over the third baseman's head with two strikes, dump it into shallow left and turn it into a double if you didn't hurry. And, you know, Pete Rose was a singles hitter, and nobody wants to watch Pete Rose. And the execution of the skill of the game, the drag bunt, the push bunt, the double steal, all the things that baseball has, it's just throwing hard now. You know, it's just power. People want to see basketball's the same way. I got tired of the dunk. I miss Pistol Pete Maravich. You know, and football was the same one, is the same way. You know, the cool parts of the game, the cool creative things of the game, guys who didn't have all that were providing things. It's like Butler. Butler was a table setter, and now that solo home run's a two-run homer. And we're not approaching the game right way. You go to a game now, you can't afford to go to a game. The game's very costly to go to a game. Yeah. So we're pricing ourselves out of the market, and we should be more creative about it than the money grab is crazy. Division I athletics is 1973, when I got out of high school, they dropped baseball all across the country at a lot of schools because Title IX had just come in and they couldn't afford baseball. Mm. They had to take their money and move it to Title IX. Well, now they're about to take, they're about to keep adding more things and more things and paying the players and things like that. There's an end to that somewhere, and something's going to happen, and you cannot just keep trying to keep up financially. So yeah. I just think it's going to hurt. Baseball's hurting itself by pricing itself out of the market.
Yeah. And I believe from watching the game being played, I think there's going to be a shift in this a little bit. And I'll tell you why. Because some teams are recognizing, I'm starting to see it, because I've been out of work and just doing the podcast. I'm like, I'm watching games all the time, right? So I watch a lot of ball games. But when you look at Kansas City, Tampa, I'm here in Chicago, I watch the Cubs, I watch the White Sox, you're starting to see the guys hitting away from the shift. You're starting to see some bunting. I saw a sacrifice, which we'd never see in the past. Sacrifice bunting. I saw a safety squeeze. I mean, so hopefully they're starting to understand that, you know, hitting the ball to all fields, doing some of these things is making teams successful. Maybe it'll start to shift and make some changes in the game by itself.
I agree. I think it the pendulum swings. And so, yeah, I've noticed that too, Pete. And I hope that's the case, because when they first started doing the shift, guys were screaming that it's illegal, change the defense. I wouldn't touch it. Right. I would make the offense make the adjustment, because good players make – Tony Gwynn was one of my best friends, and man, he talked about adjustments, and we'd talk about adjustments all the time. And if you can't make adjustments, you're not a good player. Hank Aaron didn't always pull the baseball. He hit the ball the other way when he first started, because he knew he was going to have to make adjustments because they're going to pitch him different the next year. They knew it. And now it's harder to hit 300 because, you know, the spray charts are all there and the advanced scouting is all there and the video is all there. And the game's gotten harder. I think you ought to make the ballparks way bigger, way bigger. And, mm-hmm. and you know, you'll see a lot more. My ballpark's big, big. And there's a lot of offense in that yard because they those fly balls that they run in and catch, now if you're playing deeper, they're going to fall in. And batting averages will go up. I mean, we're statistic guys, but I'm old school. I'm a batting average guy. I'm a walks and strikeout guy. So they're tinkering with the game, and I don't think it's all for the better.
You know, when we talk about your success in 43 years in the game, to help our coaches in the U.S. and around the world, what do you think made you so successful at all the programs that you've been to? And I get the part about recruiting. Some places you got to recruit and have good players. But what made you successful as a head coach?
You know, work ethic and desire, hustle. My high school coach was the winningest high school basketball coach in the country out of Little Hobbs, New Mexico. He beat Damantha. And he said hustle, desire, and pride. He always said those three things. And if you have a lot of hustle, just work. You have a lot of desire to be the very, very best and expect it. And then you have a lot of pride in what you do, and you're not going to get beat. It's not about stats anymore. It's about winning. And there's an old saying that teams win and individuals lose. That's the truth. So how do we play team ball? How do we commit? What's our mentality? Are we a shared mentality? And today it's hard to get buy-in. I mean, I've got coaches all over the country that I've talked to, and it's hard to get buy-in because now we have a free agent mentality in college athletics and in pro sports. And I do what I do, and can you plug me into my team? That's the way it's going now, and it's kind of crazy.
Ray, we got about 10 minutes. I'd love to address this area. I think because you hear it a lot, it's how important it is. I want to get your take on how you ran practices. You know, in order to get this buy-in and all this, you know, preparation, all that, and to get them to produce in the game, you've got to start somewhere. And I'm assuming that practice is so the key. I mean, so you got to be so successful in doing it there right. What are some of the keys to running some really good practices?
Well, I come from, you know, as good a people person as Dick Birmingham was, you could see when he's being firm. And when he was firm,
yes,
it was kind of made you a little nervous, made you uneasy, didn't it? Because he'd give you those steel cold blue eyes and look right at you and go right through you like lasers. And that's the generation I came from. So the first thing that I did as a coach until recent years was we didn't practice baseball. We practiced you. We found out how tough and how hard you would play. So we boxed. We ran at 5:30 a.m. in the morning. We had gut checks all the time. We called them Marine days. If we were working on discipline and buy-in. And when I would run you in the morning, I would have a list that I yelled as you were running 140-yard sprints, that we're doing this today, gentlemen. We're trying to be a team. And we have team rules. And Bobby Johnson over there didn't go to class, so you're running this morning. So-and-so missed curfew. You're running this morning. So-and-so didn't take his extra batting practice when I was supposed to be there, so we're running this morning. So-and-so didn't go to the trainer when I told him to go to the trainer. He was supposed to be there at 8:30. He never showed. So you don't have any team discipline, so I'm going to get it out of you. Wow. You can't do that anymore.
Interesting. How did you get players in practices? How did you create the practice in like a real game situation? Was there something you did differently? Or even towards the end of your career, did you change something in that to make practice more? I know it's not easy to make a game like. Nothing's game like, obviously, like the game. Or was there something you did to make a game like?
Yeah. Like, I didn't just divide them up into two different teams and play a game. Like, everybody would have a goal that day. And there'd be some guys who I felt like were going to be my late game pinch runner who learned how to steal. And I would put them in the game. They knew that inner squad that day, they were running for so-and-so, 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 so-and-so. If they got on base, walk, error, base hit, you took their place. They went set down, and you had three pitches to steal the next bag. If you're a pitcher, you were not throwing any other pitch than you were spotting the fastball. I don't care what happens, you're spotting the fastball. Then the next time out, you're spotting the fastball and you're going to learn a good changeup. So it's going to be fastball, changeup, fastball, changeup, fastball, changeup. Another kid, I'd just say, you're the center fielder for both teams. You better start working on getting a good jump. And I need to see you get a good jump. So I would put them in the game with goals. To whatever they were short on, I would try to get them. Like I'd tell the shortstop who sat back, had a good arm, you have to come get everything or you won't play the rest of the day. Even if it's hit well, you have to come get it. You have to come get the ball because the guys with big arms would sit back. And eventually that was going to cost us. So they'd sit back on a four hopper and get the guy by half a step. Well, eventually there's going to be a guy running that's going to beat it. Mm-hmm. So you better come get it. So all those things were part of it. And I had drills that we all did. The guys gave me over the years that we did all the time. And Gary Ward told me a long time ago, you know, we'll have a tendency to do some drills and oversee them. I don't do that. Gary Ward said, set the drill up so that they have to do it right. And he's right. He was correct. If you set the drill up properly, the drill will do the teaching.
Ray, was there something you changed in the last 5 years as a coach or last 10 years?
I got rid of Marine days. I got rid of all those disciplinary things because the heat was coming and I never hurt a kid in my life. The previous 39 years, 38 years, the kids called me and thanked me for it. And now this generation had to take it out because it's not what we do with kids today.
I've never asked this, I think, on a show. And we're almost, like I said, we got maybe a couple more minutes, and I'm going to have you end it off with anything that you think can help coaches get better. But if you're talking to parents nowadays, especially today, you're talking to parents and you want to give them advice on what to tell their kids so that way they develop into better people, better players also, what would be that advice?
There's a lot of kids playing today because their parents invested in these lessons and academies since they were 10. And the kids will, and I can see it in them. And they go, "Coach, I really don't want to play, but my dad spent so much money, I have to play."
Wow.
That's going on. So let them decide that's what they want to do, because there's people deciding it for the kid, and eventually the kid fakes it till a certain point in college that he really didn't want to play. And I let the kid show you what he really wants to do, because sometimes we do it because everybody in our neighborhood does it. Baseball's good for you. Make sure the kid wants to do that. But I have kids walk in my door all the time with their dads, and they're friends of mine. And I said, "I don't know that he really wants to play, so let's prove it." So he said, "Okay." I said, let's make him prove it. Let's make him prove that he wants to do this. So, making your bed is one of them. And the first thing is, you got to make your bed every day. If you don't make your bed every day for 365 days, then you don't want to do this. Alex Bregman made his bed every day.
Every day. Wow.
And I said, "Give me a calendar book. And then we're going to study about what things, the five tools that the pros want: diet, weightlifting, strength training, number of ground balls. And you're going to put those in this calendar book for a whole year. If you miss one day, you're not serious about it. You're just talking it. You're not walking it." And I make their dad sign that contract with me. And then we go over everything so that the kid can prove that he really wants to do this. Because there's a lot of kids out there just doing it. They're not near as serious, because it's the academy doesn't want them to stop, because they get a check from them. And that's their payroll. And so it never really gets to real. It never gets to real.
Yeah, I love that. And I'll tell you what, I think maybe we ought to just send them all to Mickey Owen Baseball School for 2 weeks, see if they can handle
it. They prove it there, baby. They would prove it at Mickey Owens, that's for sure. If you want to go out in that 102 degree heat and that humidity and play a doubleheader, you want to play.
Yeah, you know what? And it just brings back great memories. They're great memories of Mickey Owen Baseball School. And maybe one day we'll open another one, and because I think that's needed here in the U.S. Ray, last minute advice.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So this is interesting to me, because I've called all the coaches in the country, and we're all on the same page. We're on the same page. Whether they want to admit it or not, we're on the same page. When you go to the Caribbean, and I've had Caribbean players in junior college, they come from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other kids that you've sent come from nothing. And boy, do they cherish the game, and they'll pay the price, correct?
Absolutely. I think that's the difference. You know, I know I've been lucky. I've been to Cuba 9 times, you know, Dominican, Venezuela, like you said, Curacao, the Caribbean. They have a passion for the game. They have a love. And everybody says, well, they want to get off the islands. Okay, I get that. They want to get off the island, but a lot of them don't get off the island, and they're still playing the game. You know, and remember, in places like the Dominican Republic, by the age of 16, if you're not signed, you're done. They're not going to sign you after the age of 16. If you're 17, 18, you're too old for them. But I've been there, and those 17, 18-year-olds are still playing, and still playing with that passion, that love. No gloves, bad bats, you know. Kids that are 12 years old playing at Mickey Owen Baseball School. When I was 15, I was playing with 18-year-olds. God forbid now a 15-year-old plays for an 18-year-old team. Are you kidding? You know, if they don't play with 15s, you know, they're going to get sued, because, you know, they should be playing only with their age group, which I totally disagree. If you're pretty good, you should play up also. It's a whole different world.
What do every one of them tell you after you set up a camp and they all come up to you and say, "Thank you"?
They shake your hand. They say, "Thank you." And remember, and these are kids. I remember being at breakfast they'd be the first ones coming to you saying hello. You know, I'm like, wow. I mean, who taught these kids? They weren't taught all that in school. You know, a lot of them don't even go to school. Hopefully their parents were teaching them that. So, yeah, it's a whole different world. That's why I love, especially Latin America. Now, let's not even go to Japan, where they it's an honor to play there.
It's an honor to play there.
Oh, they, you know, the equipment, the fields, those are all, they respect everything about the game. I think we're losing that in the U.S.
Amen.
All right, man. Finish it off with some advice for our coaches in the U.S. and around the world. Anything about coaching to help them get that extra edge?
Make yourself earn it. Make the kids earn it.
All right, man. Listen, you and I, we can go for 3 hours.
Love you, Pete. I love you.
We're going to do this again. Trust me, because we didn't even get into a lot of things about, you know, managing and all that. So we're going to get into it. So, Ray, man, can't thank you enough. And by the way, as we talked about off the show, Ray Birmingham's retired. But let me tell you something. He's going to get a lot of calls and he's going to be more busy, whether it's Major League Baseball, other colleges, whether it's traveling internationally. He's going to get so many calls. He doesn't even know it. He's going to be more busy than he's ever been in his life. I want to wish you the best. I hope to run into you one day. You got to go with us with ISG Baseball somewhere in the world, do a weekend coaching clinic.
I'm in. I love you. I've always loved you. You're my brother.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Likewise, and I'll never forget Dick Birmingham ever until I die. I will always remember Coach Birmingham like a second dad to me.
Same here, brother.
All right, man. Great way to end the show. Special show for Dick Birmingham. And again, his nephew, Ray Birmingham at the University of New Mexico, 43 years in the game. Folks, thanks for joining us. Thanks for, you know, to Ray. Thanks to Brian Crocker, producer with the Lineup Media Group. Thank you to everybody in the U.S. and around the world. Don't forget, go to Baseball Outside the Box. And just hit the subscribe button. That's where the audio's at. YouTube, Facebook, Peter Caliendo. You can see it visually there, the whole interview. And again, stay safe, stay healthy. God bless you all, and we'll see you on the next show. See you, everybody.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.